Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. So I'd love to say that I enjoy interviewing candidates. And it's not that I don't enjoy interviewing candidates. It is just hard for me to stomach the corruption. It's hard for me to stomach the deception that is basically going on from the party. And so when we talk about the party, I just want you to understand there's a difference between the grass party and the political party, but the deception is on both sides. The grassroots part of the party, which is what most people know, you know, when you think Republican and Democrat, that's usually the grassroots. Then when we look at the party in politics, the political party, that's those uniparty folks, like in the U.S. Senate. You got Democrats and Republicans, but they have nothing to do with the grassroots party. They have their own agenda, and they all play their part. They're told what to do, and they will do it, or they won't get reelected, or at least they won't get the money that they got from the globalists to get reelected to go back into the Senate. Now, I'm saying this because, you know, we're interviewing Jerry here, and we don't have a lot of time because we're going to go right into that interview. But as I look at all of the, you know, the cases and the elections that are coming up in 2026, Wyoming and all over the place, folks, you have your hands full. If you don't start holding these public servants accountable, then you're going to see how bad government's going to get. You want to understand how bad it can get. Look at Washington State. Look at California. Look at New York. Look at New York City. Look at Seattle. These are your future governments coming to you. And so we're going to go straight into this interview with Jerry. Again, I love the guy, and he's got all my support. Here we go. Folks, we've got Gerald Winstrand back with us, and as a matter of fact, we've kind of covered a lot in our first three interviews. This is another interview to basically kind of move the ball forward, because what Gerald is dealing with in Missouri is a political machine, just like every other state. Every state has this problem. The political machine has full control and basically, in some respects, sells access to political offices so that they have a safeguard in these people going in to ensure that their status quo won't be disrupted. One, the status quo is their control. Two, the agenda or the things that they're trying to move forward. And as we've already talked about, Gerald has already brought this up, that there has been this collaboration, and I bring this up all the time, this huge collaboration between the Democratic and Republican Party. If you actually saw the truth about all of these things, and we actually had captured documents of how they've worked together over the past century and a half, over a century and a half, you would be absolutely appalled. So, I know we've covered a lot, but where do you want to go today? Let me just say this, because I want to ask this on the open record. You have an ability for people to donate, correct?
Yes, I do.
And so
I have a website, and it has a donate button, but it also has information to make a pay, mail a donation to my P.O. box.
Okay. So do you also have the ability for people, because people, what I want to ask you is, you know, you may have the ability to easily do $5, $10, $15, or maybe $20 a month, $20 a week, what have you. Do you have, Gerald, do you have the ability for people to set up a weekly, monthly donation for the, you know, the duration of your campaign?
Not at this point. I am working on that.
Okay, great. Because when you do get that, let me know so that we can put it up on the website as well as on your website. You'll let people know that they can create a weekly, you know, biweekly, monthly donation. Because, you know, some people may not have the money, but, the, you know, $15, $20 a month is no big deal for the way we're, you know, I mean, shoot, the 50s today, a $50 bill is the five of yesterday. I hate to marginalize that, but that's how hyperinflated our currency is getting. And so, you know, folks, whatever you can spare on a regular basis, I mean, consider doing that. Because it doesn't mean that Gerald is not going to be driving around every week. It doesn't mean that he's not going to be, you know, it's not one thing. It's not just one election. It is a whole bunch of events that lead to when the filing, the whole campaign is a lot of work. And so whatever you can provide support for, please do the best you can, because we need Gerald in office. This would be the first state office where we've got a champion standing up on the Constitution. And with that, Gerald, the floor is yours, or I should say the airwaves are yours. Go ahead.
Okay. As we've talked about in the past, Missouri's predominantly a two-party state, mostly Republican, but our metropolitan areas are Democrat-controlled, St. Louis, Kansas City, Columbia, and Springfield. As we've talked, the parties have open primaries for their candidates, which means either ballot could be chosen by anyone. Doesn't mean you have to be a member of either party. You can actually choose an opposing party if that is what you chose. And that is what we've talked about, because that's an issue in Missouri. People do not have to register by party, and they can choose any ballot that they wish at the primary election. And that has skewed results in the past by the Democrats jumping in on the Republican primary after they pretty much have already decided in their caucuses, committees, who their candidates are going to be. They're wide open because they don't have to make a choice in the primary. That's already made. So they can sometimes and do jump into the Republican primary to either pick the worst candidate that goes against theirs or someone that is as similar to their beliefs as possible. That becomes an issue. Also, as we've talked about, as far as getting access to the ballot, it's hard either as an independent candidate or independent party to get access to the election ballot. To be elected by the public, you need to get 10,000 signatures at least to be on the ballot if you're not a Republican or a Democrat. I think the Libertarian is on the ballot as well, Libertarian Party. Predominantly it's Democrat or Republican, or you need to get 10,000 signatures, which is quite difficult. Detracts from actually campaigning on issues, and you really need to get the message out. So that's the primary concern. Also, we've talked about the fact that the party platform, at least the Republican Party platform, is not adhered to by the candidates that are running as Republicans. They pick and choose or totally ignore the party platform, so it doesn't represent the gist of where their stance is. Along with that, we don't have a strong party vetting to make sure that people actually are or propose to be of the nature and basis on positions that they're taking. So the party doesn't necessarily inquire, and the public doesn't know, including those in the primary. That limits choices both in the primary election and in the general election. You only have what you've been allowed to have. And so the party is quite attempting to control the members of the local committees who help select the candidates that are going to be in the primary. And sometimes those groups also push particular candidates in spite of the fact that it's supposed to be an open election and the committees are supposed to be supportive of the primary, not a particular candidate. But as far as I'm definitely going to be a different type of candidate. I do lean Republican. I've been Republican for the bulk of my adulthood, and I am running on the Republican ballot. I want to push the fact that we have a constitution that should be adhered to. The constitution limits government and espouses, reinforces the rights that we're given by God, our freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and right to petition our government when we have grievances, among others. One of my my background is related to accounting, auditing, and computer systems. I've been a professional auditor all my career, financial operational, moving into information technology, and our current incumbent does not have a audit background. So I'm looking to bring professionalism to the office, bring in risk management so that we focus on what's needed and follow the Constitution so we limit the extent of government. Missouri is going to take a big hit going forward with the loss, discontinuance of the COVID funds. It was supposed to have already been gone, but it isn't. But that is a good hit on our budget for the state. So we need to get back to meeting the needs and responsibilities of our citizens, which means we're not going to have time or the resources to waste on stuff that is either a pet project of someone or just a inefficient process. So I wish to focus on that. I want to increase communications with the citizens. That's not being done right now. The citizens need to know what is going on in the state and seek their input to see what they think the issues should be focused on. Have a discussion of priorities and situations to fine-tune and focus on what is truly needed. Right now, we don't have significant communication. I intend to go around the state on a regular basis, maybe twice a year in all the regions of the state, not just the big cities, so that anybody that wishes can come and participate in these meetings. It's important to get their input. We have a lot of issues, and we need to focus on the needs of everyone, not just special interest or corporate interests. Right now, we've had situations that have just passed bills in our Senate and House and signed by the governor that is intended to provide financial benefits for our sports teams in Kansas City. That's not in adherence to our state constitution. We're not allowed to provide individuals or groups special benefits or whatever, but a lot of time the legislature says, well, we don't know if it's constitutional or not, which they should. They were sworn by their oath of office to adhere to the federal and the state constitutions, and yet they turn over and pass unconstitutional bills and say, well, the judiciary will determine. Well, they're the legislators. They have a responsibility to represent their constituents in the first place, but not waste time, effort, or energy on passing unconstitutional laws. We don't need the aggravation and political warfare. We need to focus on the citizens and their needs. And we need to ensure that we have accountability and transparency within our government so that people are fully aware of what is going on, what's being spent, and who's spending it. And so they could go to their town, county meetings for their local government and express their either support for things that are going good or express their displeasure with money that is not being focused appropriately or being spent on items that shouldn't be. And so I want to provide a level of transparency for citizens across states so that they can actually see what is happening. I want to help restore confidence and trust in government. It seems that we pretty well have been pushing that limit for quite some time. And like I said, with the passage of unconstitutional bills, that definitely shows that we need more adherence to our Constitution so that it supports the needs of all our citizens. And I want to help restore citizen sovereignty over the government so that they can seek input, provide any grievances to their government to help restore citizen input and sovereignty over their governments. Also, I bring a level of experience, a professional into the office. As I said, I've been a career auditor all my career. It would be best to help provide direction, focus, and effective use of the auditor's office to that. And I intend to enforce the Constitution and be nonpartisan in the way the office serves all citizens of the state. As we're getting our budget reduced for the state, we need to assure efficiency and effectiveness of all government operations and expenditures. And so the auditor's office will focus on that. Okay, as I stated, it's important that we enforce the provisions and the restraints of our state constitution as well as the federal constitution. The purpose of government is to protect the rights of the citizens, not special interests, not to provide tax benefits here and there, but protect the rights of the citizens. The U.S. Constitution guarantees a Republican form of government, and we don't really have that structure in our state. Many states don't, but we're talking about Missouri, and that's what is important to what we're doing. We don't have constitutions for each of our individual counties. Our counties is what joined together originally to form the state of Missouri. And so as we look at the state and the federal constitution, our counties should have constitution to specify what their duties are, what their functions of their various components of their units, whether it's legislative, executive, also for the judicial, and so that they can actually truly represent the rights of the citizens up through the state government, which isn't being enforced right now. The counties don't really have much input or take much input into directing the focus of the Missouri House or Senate to get bills that fully support the Constitution. We don't have a regular process to get input into our legislators. We do have the ability to put forth proposals for constitutional amendments that comes both from the legislature as well as the citizens. The citizens can put together an initiative petition which has been another issue this last year of trying to change it. And it's not really a good change that they're proposing, where in order to get a constitutional amendment passed, you have to pass 8 out of the 9 congressional districts. That's not going to get a lot of things done for the citizens of the state. For the most part, the party is, both the Republican and the Democrats have got together to lock in a party form of government. As I've said, getting access to the ballot for independent candidates or other parties is extremely difficult, and that limits the citizens' ability to choose good candidates that don't want to run under the Democratic or Republican candidacy. But the two parties work together to hold back legislation that they don't want passed, and they work together to keep their control and to control the agenda by keeping independent or other party candidates off ballot unless they jump through the major hurdle. It limits the citizens' choices. One way they've done it is we've had campaign finance reform by the state, but that's just a moving target. They've restricted donations from ordinary voters, but corporations and special interest and big donors have created other vehicles which still get their influence in. And we've seen the special interests, such as the stadium bill, such as the construction work in process rate for the utilities that are going to be incorporated. It's not in the interest of the citizens. A lot of the legislative bills are pretty vague. Their intent isn't always clear. They leave it open so that they can interpret it whichever way they choose to on the finer points. And a lot of times it ends up getting taken to court, and the court should be ruling on whether or not the laws are being interpreted as they're written, but being poorly written leaves a lot of room. And a lot of the bills that we have that go through that are supposed to limit certain things and protect citizens don't have a lot of enforcement provisions in them. They give directive, well, this shouldn't be done, this should be done, but not much prescription as far as what is the enforcement if it's not being followed. As I've said, we have legislators who don't always follow the Constitution. We have, in the Missouri Constitution, specific provisions that call for the bill to be single subject, follow the original title, and other particulars that the legislators don't always want to follow. They've taken an oath to both the federal and the state constitution, but nobody holds them to it, including their voters at this point. According to the way the state powers of executive branch look at it, only the state attorney general can enforce violation of the oath of office, but that is not clear and specified, but again, as we talk about vague bills and all, that is where it stands. Really needs to be corrected so that other areas of authority or the citizens can remove the candidates that violate their oath of office. And as we've seen recently with the reapportionment, meaning the change of congressional districts, it relies very much on political consultants, and they push a lot of the legislation that goes through. It's not really directed by the citizens. The legislators don't always put a lot into it. The lobbyists Political consultants are pretty heavily engaged in the redistricting, as well as the bills that are presented to the House and Senate. And we need to get more citizen involvement and hold our legislators more accountable.
Well, so, Jerry, let me just dive into this, or Gerald, forgive me. Let me just dive into a couple of points that you're bringing up that I think are really important, and some things that maybe you may want to consider. So currently, we're dealing with a government that has been operating off of the rails, both at the federal and state level, for such a long time that it needs to start. And obviously, I say on my radio show all the time that it's got to start in the counties, because you don't go trying to clean up another state before you clean up your own state. You don't start cleaning up another county until you clean up your own county. And you don't start cleaning up another neighborhood. So you want to start local with your own neighborhood and your own county, your own community, and your county. And as you kind of highlighted, this fact that there's no county constitutions, that is a huge, capital H-U-G-E problem, because it is a government. And under the axiom of the Declaration of Independence, when Thomas Jefferson said governments are created or instituted by we the people, or by men, that means that when we have a government and we have no ownership over that government can then become an administrative state being manipulated and used. And as you quickly pointed out, or you aptly pointed out, that the states were created by the counties. The origins of the states came from and begotten from the counties themselves. In other words, the states are the children of the counties. Well, that's how important our counties are. Therefore, we have to correct, or we at least have to acknowledge that if we don't own our counties, they can play games and basically say those counties aren't ours. The day we create a constitution, when the people of that county get together, it's not for the state to create the county. And as a matter of fact, by the way, that county government is our government, not the state's government, not the federal government. The federal government did us a favor as they were organizing territories to say, well, we're going to kind of create this, because they had they were subject matter experts on some of the necessities that needed to be applied that the people moving into these states may not have known. So their assistance in helping form the counties, creating the court, and those types of things was, very good. It was good help. What they didn't do was they should have said, because this is our right as a people, this is go back to the Declaration, that you need to form this county yourself. You need to create a constitution to determine what you want that county government to do for you. And from that point, then down the road, when you have to create a state, the counties, all with their own constitutions, can then be ready and prepared to create a state constitution to ensure that they don't delegate power to that state government that they want to have at the county level. So I'm just shining the spotlight on the importance of that one line, no county constitutions. Because as we look today, and I've provided this in historical context, that as of 1816, when the federal government started manipulating states and what needed to be in their constitutions, which they had no authority to do, they literally started manipulating states to start serving them. Out the gate, and the concept from the Constitutional Convention, because we covered that this past year, out the gate in the Constitutional Convention, states were sovereign. They had self-determination. If they wanted to be a slave state, that was up to them. If they wanted to be a free state, that was up to them. If they wanted to have a theocracy associated to their republican form of government, that's up to them, because most states had that at the time of the Constitution. They had state-sponsored churches. They weren't theocracies, but they had state-sponsored churches that took care of compassionate services. So Whatever the states want to do, it's up to them. The federal government could not manipulate and say, oh, you got to do this, you got to do that. That changed in 1816. So every constitution from 1816 to today is all suspect because the federal government just didn't do one little bit of manipulation, change this and change that into the state of Indiana's constitution in 1816. Every state that joined the union, they took more latitude and more latitude and more latitude to where they dictated, you will have this line in your constitution, as if they're the parents, as if they're the boss. When the reality is, and we're covering this right now in Madison's notes, or in these five critical documents that we've been covering, we're clearly stating that the states are the parents to that federal government. They can't tell a parent what they have to do. It doesn't work that way. And it's the same thing with the county being told what they have to do. This is why we have to take the counties back. Now, the other thing that you brought up, which is just ties hand in hand with this, and I'm glad you had it in sequence, was this concept of the loss of our Republican form of government in the state level because of Baker v. Carr and Reynolds v. Sims, when the Warren Court reached into every state and said, you got to wipe out these counties and you need to configure your legislative, you know, system under the population of people instead of under these governments that you never created. See, this is why they got away with it, because people had no affinity. They had no direct relationship with that government. So when it was taken from them, they didn't realize what happened. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So these
a lot of influence on certain counties that are large in population, but they're using both their representation in both the Missouri House and the Senate to push stuff through, as opposed to all counties being fully represented in the Senate. Directly.
Right. That's correct. So that way we have, and the whole reason why we have bicameral legislative bodies, not just because it's representing the people, it's actually representing the sovereignty of our county government as well as the people of our counties, which is why Washington State, folks, the liberal Washington State's constitution allocates counties getting representation in the House. In other words, this county gets at least one. In other words, these other populated counties can't take their one, which they have done, where we've got now five counties, sometimes even larger county groups, that have to share their representation. This is the evil of this whole system. The other thing that you kind of brought up that I think is just, it's the huge zit that, you know, you kind of want to, you start backing up when you see it because it's about to pop. And you don't want that to get on you because it is just that nasty. The point is, is that the supreme law of the land, the Constitution, literally states that any person who is under oath, who violates that oath while under that oath, in other words, directly violates or fails to hold another accountable by giving aid and comfort, must be removed immediately and banned for life. This is not a trial. You're going to crime. You're not going to lose liberty. It's not, you know, no fines, no fees. You have perjured yourself and no longer eligible. In other words, the eligibility of you being able to maintain your office is based upon your consistent ability to support and defend that Constitution. So as you bring this up, that there's a lack of compliance to the Constitution by legislators, I honestly see that the people need to understand that we have a law that actually holds them accountable. We need the people to realize that our legislators at every level are afraid to hold themselves accountable. This is why you are key here, Gerald. You've actually signed a pledge where you want to be held accountable. Everybody, we need everybody that is campaigning for office moving forward. If they don't want to be held accountable, why would we let them go into office? What that means is I want to be able to get away with what I can get away with, and I don't want you to hold me accountable. Come on, folks, let's wake up. The law of the land demands compliance. It says that you can't be in office. They created this law where it's almost like that self-cleaning button on the oven. And when they put that into the 14th Amendment, they push that button. It's on, and it's on all the time. The problem is that there's no magic in the system where all of a sudden, you know, when a person violates, as soon as that they voted against the Constitution in a bill, you know, like a digital currency bill, whatever, when they violate it, it's not like all of a sudden out of, you know, they lose complete control of their body and they just grab up their stuff. They sign a piece of paper, I resign. And next thing you know, they're going back to their home with their head between their legs. It's not a magic system. It's just like this nullification. When a law is created where there is no authority for that law to be created, it is to be nullified and void. Now, there's no magic here. The ink does not just, you know, expunge itself, or the paper doesn't expunge the ink off of it. It doesn't eat it up and make it disappear. We have to say, hold on here. This law that you've created is not within the enumerations of the Constitution. Therefore, this is an unconstitutional law. Therefore, it must be nullified and void. Going back to those people who created that, they must say, we had no authority to do this and we're expunging this. That is the process. And just like with public servants, all we have to do is say, look, you violated your oath. The law demands you to be removed immediately and to be banned. We expect you to be held accountable. So when the people start demanding, and this is the whole point of both your campaign and all campaigns moving forward, that when the people start demanding compliance to the law and compliance to the Constitution, we'll actually start getting it. Because if we're not voting for people that just would say, I don't want to be held accountable, we don't want to institute these laws, they need to be bending over backwards to make it possible and good, logical ways and fair ways so that we can actually hold them accountable. If they're not doing that, then they're not serving us. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to, you know, steamroll over it in any way or any capacity over all these great things you've said and the positions you're taking. I just want to highlight these things because I want the people to understand you have to demand this. And folks, this is why you have to support candidates that are willing to put their neck out on the line and say, hold me accountable. When we, the people, actually grab people to say, you know, you can find anybody, any criminal can easily come into office and take advantage of you left and right and steal everything away from you, because that's what they've been doing. We have created a society of moral turpitude. We have to make sure moving forward that anybody and everybody that is going to be akin or associated to public service want to be held accountable, expect to be held accountable, and when we hold them accountable, they don't even say anything. They go, you know what, you're right, I didn't realize. And let them beg forgiveness once. And we should be a forgiving people and say, this is your first and final. Do it again, you're gone. And I'm going to tell you, when we get to this point, we will actually finally get to a point where our paradigm has shifted so well that we won't have to be worrying about first and final, because nobody will cross that line. That's how important this is, because then we have a government that is actually really doing its job and serving us and staying within the confines that we've given it the power to do. So, anywho, there's a lot of really other great things, like you're talking about campaign finance reform. And so let me ask you this. What ways would you really, if you had a chance to focus on campaign finance reform, how would you do that? Now, I see that you've talked about restricting donations from voters, you know, but I look at it this way, and tell me what you think. When we look at an election, that election has a physical boundary, correct?
Yeah.
And so who should be voting in a city council race?
the actual registered voters.
Right, and so the law basically dictates who's voting in that, right? I mean, you actually have to have a residence in that city to vote for city council, right?
Yeah.
You don't get a ballot if you don't live in that city. And that's the same thing for county commissioners, right? And I can't vote in your election in Missouri, correct? I have to reside in Missouri. So every election has a – actually, this is just – there's a logical boundary of who gets to vote. Well, what do you think about making, you know, a law or actually you stating the obvious? Why is it that a person that can't vote in the election has a right and a privilege to be able to throw money in and affect your representation in your state or in your county or in your city? It's like Soros coming in and saying, we want you to have this person and throwing all of this money for TV ads, giving this person an overwhelming advantage. How do you fix that problem?
Just totally restrict, actually not restrict, prohibit out-of-state donations in the first place.
And actually, so how could you do that? There's a way of doing that, but most people don't think about it. So here's a question for you, which is giving you an answer. Actually, it's more of an answer than a question. Aren't there laws that forbid election meddling? In other words, if you don't have an ability to be in that election, that would be called election interference. Like China doesn't have any ability to be, you know, have any say, they can't be involved in our election. So when they're involved and they're interfering, that's against the law, isn't it? So why is it that if you're a citizen of one county and you live, and somebody that's a citizen of another county that doesn't live in your county, has no residence, has no ties, how is what they're doing by throwing money into your county not election interference? That's a good question, isn't it? Because by law, you know, anybody from another state or anybody that's outside of the boundary of the election, i.e. the United States, for all of our elections, anybody foreign, that'd be foreign influence. Well, why is it foreign influence if it's from one state to another? Because when we look at what happened in Georgia and how the red state of Georgia has two Democratic senators, because money constantly crosses that boundary from California and the rest of the United States and pays for Democratic senators, right? Okay, that's happened in several states, but I'm just saying Georgia is a, you know, a huge one, as well as Alabama, because I remember back, you know, a decade or so, maybe more than that, when a judge was running and an accusation flew out that was completely false, and that accusation and money was coming in supporting from outside that state, and that judge didn't win that senator seat.
No, did not.
Arizona's another one. So my point is that when are the states going to wake up? And as a matter of fact, as the auditor, you know, when you really look at, you know, this glaring, what is the intent of election interference and election integrity? Let's start looking, you know, because back in the day, you couldn't even promise somebody anything. If you vote for me, I'll buy you a drink. That right there was buying votes. When a candidate says, if you vote for me, I'll give you health care. Well, I don't know. Maybe health care is just a little bit more expensive than a drink. But we don't think it's buying a vote? Are we that stupid? That's not a rhetorical question. Is America literally that stupid?
No, but they end up pushing their agenda anyway.
Well, so they end up pushing it, but there's never been an argument put forward to say, look, Obama campaigned on, you know, doing something that he had no authority to do, and he got a whole bunch of support to get him in, and he did it. And he violated his oath. So when we go back to the people or the candidates, we need to hold them accountable, because as soon as he started stepping out of line saying, we need a national health care system, well, basically you ran a whole campaign on that. And so what you just did was you prostituted yourself so that you would get all of this financial support so that you could do this one thing. And let's just say that one thing's legitimate. It's actually a legitimate thing to do. You're buying votes. If the people have some, you know, local interest and, you know, government to do something, and you make a campaign to do that, and you say, if you vote for me, this is the first thing I'm going to do, that's basically buying votes, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And, but that's, those are, you know, those are maybe good intentions and so forth, but still, you've got to correlate that when you campaign, and you're campaigning on doing something that we have the authority to do, then that would be kind of a good thing, buying votes. But when they actually say, I'm going to do something we don't have the authority, but I'm going to make it happen, that right there should be treason. Anyway, and those people who actually voted for the Treasonous Act, shouldn't they be held accountable and lose their citizenship? Because they wanted the Constitution to be violated. They wanted to throw away the process of the Constitution and implement something completely unconstitutional without going through the amendment process and so forth. Because the only way we can have legitimately a health care system, the Affordable Care Act, is through an Article 5 amendment, correct?
Yes.
And when they said, we're not going to follow that, we're just going to assume this power, then they directly violated the Constitution, and therefore those people who voted for that, they could be, and if they knew that there was going to be no amendment in the campaigning, that we're just going to create this bill to do this, we're going to take Hillary Care and run with it. Because that's what Hillary Care was, a bill that was intent to legislate, not amend the Constitution, not to create an amendment. Therefore, this is where we're just in this, I would just call it really dangerous territory, where people are so ignorant, they have no idea how complicit they are in this system. With that, let me just kind of wrap up, because we are out of time, and I've gone a little long. But, you know, I completely support the fact that you're becoming a champion for the Constitution. It's definitely a tough row to hoe. And so you're going to hear me say, okay, folks, you need to send Jerry love. You need to get out there and contribute to his campaign. Go to his website and start setting up. Do it on your own right now until he can actually set up a regular contribution that you can actually have your credit card charge, $15, whatever that is. Right now, at the cost of gas going down, that's great because it buys him more gas. But with inflation and everything else, these campaigns aren't cheap. And it's great that somebody is doing this, but they need support. I'm telling you right now, the PACs and the businesses that are buying the government, that is destroying this government, that is destroying our liberties and actually moving this government into the global communists, they're throwing money at it. Jerry doesn't need anything close to that amount of money. But he needs money. And so it's easier for me to say these things than it is for you, because it just sounds like you've just got your hand out. And so I'm here to help, and I'm not from the government. And with that, any parting comments or anything else? And then down the road, we'd love to have you back to see, you know, how things are going, you know, and clarity on your positions or anything new, if that's okay with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want to say this campaign isn't really about me. It's about helping all the people in Missouri so that we can enforce the Constitution and have fairness, limitation of the government, and reduce or limit our spending so that it goes where it's actually needed.
Right.
And having greater transparency and accountability so that the citizens can assert their sovereignty over the government.
Right. Excellent. So, folks, you not only need Jerry in the auditor's office, you need a Jerry clone to be your governor. You need a Jerry clones to be your legislators in your House and your Senate. We need to start demanding that those who represent us, those who serve us, will actually serve the Constitution. If you are literally pandering and begging for them to give you something, give you handouts, you are a part of the problem. And I can't believe that anybody that listens to this show, because I'm slinging insults at you all the time. There's no way you listen to the show and take those insults. You want our government back. We all want our government back. And candidates like Jerry Wistrand is the guy to do it. He's right now the only one, so he's going to have the spotlight quite a bit. But nevertheless, and the nice thing, I just want to say this as a closing note. The nice thing is that I'm looking at Missouri and Peter Kinder, who's the chair, who I've actually called out to actually do an interview with him, because I think he's on board with this. I just don't think that he's, you know, been able to actualize how to unify the county, but his how to unify the party. But his message is clear. He wants to unify the party and get rid of these factions. What better way to unify every good patriot and every good citizen of the United States to unify them on the Constitution instead of these little factions of Second Amendment, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, let me basically thank you for coming on, and we will have you back.
Thanks for having me, GR.
You bet. God bless, Jerry. Okay, folks, I can't tell you how important it is that we support candidates that are willing to actually be held accountable. They're worth their weight in gold. If there was something that we could value greater than gold, then, you know, as far as a commodity, I mean, what we're looking at right now, price of gold is pretty high. My point is, folks, is that we need to shift our paradigms. We have to actually demand that we elect people of character. We are going to be talking in the Constitutional Convention about the original idea of setting standards that public servants couldn't be in debt and so forth. That's coming up. You need to listen to what we're telling you of how the framers really kind of started setting this cast and started moving this nation in a direction. And as they talked, they said the people, the voters, will be the ones that will decide whether they re-elect these culprits or whether they re-elect their champions. It's your fault. It's not my fault anymore. I make sure I vet people, and I will not vote for somebody that is outright, unless it's a damage control. In other words, like the president and those types of things, that's damage control. Governor, damage control. Your representatives are the ones that we cannot squander votes. And we're better to start seeing undervotes if there's not a good candidate. That means that it's your responsibility the next time around to start working with the party and other people to ensure you've got a candidate ready to run. And the day you start working on the next election is the day after the current one. We can't waste any more time. I understand, everybody understands the importance behind all of this. But more importantly, let me add this. It takes money to run a campaign. When you've got a champion for the Constitution, I'm begging you, please get out there and start sending some love to Jerry. This guy is traveling around at his own expense. The party is not going to give him a penny on his statewide campaign. They use this, we got to get through the primary to prove that we're going to pay you. And that's how they basically starve out the competition and make sure that they direct donations towards their anointed ones. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.